government has a central role in this. Mm-hmm. I'm very American in my point of view on the limited role of government, but this is a perfect role for government because we are going through a technological change, and there will be people who need help, who need reskilling, who need some time during which they develop new skills and develop new ways of thinking, way of working. They need help. Now, some big companies are providing this help, but one of the problems I see is we have a lot of independent gig workers. They'll have to, it's their responsibility to educate, but they may need help. So while large companies are actually investing in this, many independent people have to fend for themselves, but they do have to. They better do it.
Mm-hmm. And how would you advise that they develop either some strategies or new initiatives to really encourage people to acquire the necessary skills that will enable them to remain relevant in an AI-driven world? Hi, everyone. It's Lauren Hawker-Zaffer. Welcome back to Redefining AI, the Tech Podcast. I'm an educator and I'm taking you on an educational exploration. Now, today's journey invites us to take a deep dive into the ever-evolving landscape of work and its intersection with groundbreaking technologies. In this thought-provoking episode, we will explore the future of work and the transformative impact that technology, especially AI, will have on our professional lives. We will unravel the potential opportunities, challenges, and implications of AI's integration, paving the way for a new era of work that is shaped by intelligent automation and human collaboration. Now, to address this, we are joined by Dr. Yossi Sheffi. Dr. Yossi Sheffi is the Elisha Gray II Professor of Engineering Systems at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where he serves as director of the MIT Center for Transportation and Logistics. He is an expert in systems optimization, risk analysis, and supply chain management, which are the subjects he researches and teaches at MIT, both at the School of Engineering and at the Sloan School of Management. It's a real pleasure to welcome you today, Yossi, onto Redefining AI. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. Nice to see you.
It's lovely to see you. How are you today?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
Yeah, I can't complain. It's been somewhat interchangeable, the weather, but apart from that, it's relatively enjoyable. So I want to start the conversation with a posting that you made recently. So recently you posted an interesting LinkedIn post on why humans and machines will be co-workers in the workplace of the future. And you claim that we are now on the cusp of an industrial revolution that's driven by innovation such as artificial intelligence. So I just want to start our conversation with this claim that you shared.
That's the entire interview in one, in the first question.
That is very true.
But people are concerned right now. Some people are really anxious about AI is going to take their job. AI is going to change. And I must say that the opinion range all over the place. There are people who think it's a death knell to humanity, and people think it's going to usher a new unbelievable area of plenty and high standard of living. In between, of course, there are people who think it will kill all the jobs and replace all the jobs by machine, and people like me who thinks it is an way overblown worry. They just cannot imagine this working. And for the most part, well, look, there will be some jobs, we can go over it later, there will be some jobs that will be lost. In every technological revolution, some jobs are lost. I mean, we don't have any more elevator operators. We don't have any more people in switchboard who put, plugs into switchboard. We don't have any more computer. Computer used to be a job description. Early companies had room full of people, mostly women, who were doing all the accounting by hand and doing all the calculation by hand. They're called computers. All of this job disappeared. However, in every industrial revolution, more jobs appeared, and most of the technology ended up helping people do their job better, faster, more accurately, better customer service, what have you, than jobs lost. And I can imagine And we can talk about all of this, of course, this happening exactly with the current, call it the technological revolution, which is AI and lots of other technologies.
And is that one of the sort of fundamental reasons as to why you believe that it's an overblown concern? Do you think that because of the fact that every industrial revolution has created more opportunity, it's created new jobs, that it stems to a little bit of an unnecessary over-worry?
That's one part. One part is the fact that when there's so much uncertainty, you fall back on what you know, and what you know is history. So that's one argument. Another argument is that things that computers are simply not good at, and whether it's AI or any other statistical method, you cannot, first of all, there are jobs that will never be replaced. I mean, I don't see your plumber coming to your house, and instead of a plumber, there's a machine that climbs the stairs and greets you and fixes your plumbing. That's not going to happen. Let's say it's not going to happen in, certainly not in my lifetime, but not in your lifetime. Lots of professions will still be there as they are today, maybe with better, some little tools, but as they are today. There's another issue. When jobs are becoming easier to do, another example, you know what's automatic teller machines? You know, when automatic teller machines came about, started to be widespread in late 70s, early 80s, people thought that tellers will disappear. There'll be no more bank tellers. Mm-hmm. Why would a bank teller just go to the machine? Turns out there are now more than twice as many tellers in the United States as there were before ATM. Why? Because of ATMs, opening a bank branch became a lot less expensive. So I don't know about the street of Geneva or Zurich, but the street of Boston and Paris are full with bank branches. I mean, there are many more of them because it became easier to do so, and actually more tellers. Then there are issues that are really hard to predict, what I call the side effects. Give you another example. In the early 1900s, Ford invented the assembly line. You know, so instead of people, you know, artisans coming together, building a car, started with the assembly line, people just did the same work. The number of employees of Ford grew dramatically. It was a few thousand before, grew to 150,000 at the height of the Model T. But this is not the big effect. The big effect that nobody predicted was the cars became a lot less expensive. People develop highway, motels, restaurants, you know, parks, the whole hospitality industry, boom, with millions of jobs. As a result of cars becoming less expensive and people being able to afford them. So it is, and there are many, many examples like this. First of all, the machines are far from perfect, generative AI notwithstanding, and you need people to monitor them. You need people to understand the underlying process in order to be able to monitor them and intervene when something goes wrong. This is a tough job. Monitoring is a very tough job because you have to watch something that you are not doing. And it's just hard to keep concentration. We can talk more about related jobs, but let's kind of give you an idea why I think that jobs are not going to disappear.
So if we maybe take that thought branch and apply it to the actual use of AI. So if you look at AI applications that have maybe already transformed various industries, like how have they transformed the industries and what has come out of that that was also not foreseen, like the example that you gave with Ford in the 1900s?
Okay, so the question is, let me give you an example that you use every day. When you open your iPhone, I don't know if you use an iPhone with your face or Samsung with your face, it's AI. You're using AI. When you are using Google Maps to run around the world, you're using AI, a version of AI. Now, the thing that creates right now all the excitement is a new type of generative AI and large language models. And these are just the beginning, but you see this already, for example, in healthcare. Detecting diseases. I have a colleague at MIT who works with Massachusetts General Hospital on detecting breast cancer. And the machines are now as good as radiologists. They're not better yet, but they'll become better over time with more data. something that is used quite a bit already is, and that's something that raises a problem, is fraud detection and credit scoring by financial institution. This is a part that gives people concern about biases, because this depends a lot on the training data. But we can talk more about it. In manufacturing, there's predictive maintenance. You try to forecast when a machine will fail. So if people use what's called digital twins and send data back and forth all the time to a twin of the being aircraft engine that's on the aircraft, everything that happens, it sends data to the digital twin, to the digital manifestation of this item, and getting all this done, it analyzes all this. Oh, you need to replace the carburetor. You need to replace this blade. You need to replace this. Warehousing, in my area, supply chain management, people are implementing warehouse robotics like there's no tomorrow. Not only Amazon, everybody is building, you know, and these robots are fused with AI. In retail, you see forecasting, of course, suggestion of product, but you also see self-checkout everywhere. In transportation, you see autonomous driving. All of this is fueled by a lot of AI. So this is some example you ask about use of AI. A lot of it we're using, we don't even realize we're using it.
Mm-hmm. No, and I think that that's the actual point that I want you to raise. So a lot of the examples that you've given, there is almost a conscious relationship or recognition of AI being in the loop or AI being in the picture, or there's an obvious sort of view that you can tell that there is a component of an AI-driven technology at the back end of what's happening. And a lot of what you've mentioned seem to have had a positive effect on the development of how it's transformed industries. I mean, maybe you can talk about what you mentioned in warehousing, supply chain management. How has this been positively affected?
2 points. First of all, interestingly, it did not lead to job losses. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. Amazon is very advanced in using robotics in their warehouses. Between when they started really using it in 2017 or so, between 2017 and now, all the warehouses are full of robots who make the work a lot faster, a lot more accurate. On top of it, they hired 1.2 million workers. So it's it's not quite the end of the jobs that everybody. And by the way, in the U.S., unemployment is an all-time low. With all the robots, with all the AI, unemployment is 3.2%. It's unbelievably low. There are about 2.6, 2.7 job posting for every worker available. It doesn't look like the technology yet is. It can happen. Niels Bohr once said it's very hard to predict, especially the future. So mm-hmm. It's
of course. You know, but I also think if we go back to the start of the conversation, I mean, the start of the conversation, we spoke about how there was so much concern about the fact that yes, AI will be a job killer. And now you've just highlighted that it's led to less job losses. It's led to an increase in employment. It's led to a lot better productivity. Why is that concern still there? Why are people still in the opinion then that it is a job killer?
Very good question. Because first of all, some jobs will be lost. Some jobs will be lost, by the way. And right now, the jobs will be at a level, at a white collar level, you know, accountant, junior lawyers. AI can now go and prepare the brief, generative AI by itself. It's not good yet. It's not ready for prime time, as they say, but the capability is starting to grow. So people are worried about it. That's one. Different people are worried than people are worried about moving manufacturing to China. Mm-hmm. Now it's some white collar workers. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that many jobs are going to change. Even though I say many jobs are going to be, you know, assisted by technology, augmented by technology, but still going to change. And nobody likes change.
Yeah.
Everybody's worried about change. And finally, the point is that, as I said, in the future, one can expect new industries and new job description that we cannot even imagine yet. But we don't know any of this. We do know, or we can imagine, that people are going to lose their job. And these are our neighbors, our family, you know, our coworkers, us. So we can imagine people, We know the people who might lose their job. We don't know the people in the profession who may be generated as a result of new technology. So all of this creates understandable anxiety.
Which is very understandable. I think that the point that you've mentioned that a lot of people can relate to is certainly the fear of change. And regardless if you are an employer, a future employer, if you're a parent, if you're a provider, if you're an innovator or a visionary, you want to be able to identify components that you can maybe empower. You can help develop skills that will ensure that there's a positive preparation for the future.
Absolutely. Government has a central role in this. Mm-hmm. I'm very American in my point of view on the limited role of government, but this is a perfect role for government because we are going through a technological change. And there will be people who need help, who need reskilling, who need some time during which they develop new skills and develop new ways of thinking, way of working. They need help. Now, some big companies are providing this help. But one of the problems I see is we have a lot of independent gig workers. They'll have to, it's their responsibility to re-educate, but they may need help. So while large companies are actually investing in this, many independent people have to fend for themselves, but they do have to. They better do it.
Mm-hmm. And how would you advise that they develop either some strategies or new initiatives to really encourage people to acquire the necessary skills that will enable them to remain relevant in an AI-driven world?
Okay. So first of all, not everybody will be an AI programmer. Not everybody will be suddenly data scientists who can develop new AI model. If you didn't go to school, 20, 30 years ago, it's not an easy transition and you may not be able to do it. But I'm always talking to people of broadening the area that you're in. I was talking to last week to I was interviewed on one of the Boston stations. And after we talked, the guy said, okay, so what's your advice to me? I'm on air. I'm telling, what do I do? I said, you look at adjacent area. You have to understand editing. Look, you understand television. You've been there for 30 years. You know how it works. But you cannot stay an on-air talent. This may be gone or maybe different or maybe less of you. I don't know. But you go to adjacent areas. You have to understand, how to prepare, how to talk to client, how to get stuff done. And by the way, you don't have to develop new AI, but you have to play with ChatGPT and the other to understand how you put a video with just a command. What can you get out of it? How can you play with it? Because now you'll present yourself as an entirely different person. You both know how to use new technology. You don't have people are mistaken. They think, okay, I have to be a computer scientist. No. I always tell them, you drive a car, you have no idea how the car works. But you can drive it. It doesn't mean you can build a car or fix it, but you can drive it. That's what you need to understand. You need to know how to use it. That's all. And there are many, many more coming. Online courses, online instructions, and a lot of available ways to upskill yourself or broaden your in the industry that you know. I always suggest stay in the industry that you know because it's hard to go to totally new industry. But in the industry that you know, regardless of where you are, broaden yourself.
I think it's a very good example. I mean, I recently read myself about the opportunity for virtual co-hosts. So it applies to me myself. Instead of me being a host on a podcast, I could have a virtual co-host that could potentially also replace me. So instead of me hosting the session, it would be my virtual co-host. I think that one idea that certainly should be toyed with is the opportunity for people to explore their AI personas. Like you've highlighted, how can I access material to understand how to prompt engineer, how to, build something quite simple, not build a whole chat GPT, training LLMs, but just being able to interact so that there's that synergy in the workplace, that you can work with AI and augment your own potential. You can augment your own skill capabilities.
And by the way, just remember that humans still have qualities that are, you know, the machine are good at many things, but they don't have empathy. They don't have a moral code. They don't have, there are a lot of things that the machine still are so far from replacing. Curiosity and creativity. It takes quite a bit of time. So I don't know if I'll, by the way, enjoy, but that's maybe generational, if I enjoy talking to avatar of you. I'd rather talk to you, honestly.
So yeah, I was just going to ask you, actually. I mean, you say that they're far from replacing it, which I certainly agree with, this idea of general intelligence we're definitely far from. But is it something that you foresee as being important, that a machine is empathetic?
Are you familiar with the Industry 5.0, the EU initiative? You know, we had four recognized industrial revolution, and the EU came up with what is going to be the fifth industrial revolution. Mm-hmm. And they talk about a human-centric AI. They talk about, of course, sustainability. They're European. They must talk about sustainability. But it's talk about using the technology, but human-centered use of technology. I think that's the way it will go. I think the EU thinking is kind of ahead of others in this, because this will create, let me take a step back. I think one mistake that many AI developers are doing, they're judging their success by how good it is in doing human tasks. And over time, I think we'll start thinking of how good it is in augmenting the work of human, how good it is in helping human. Because there are things that the machine can do better. The machine can do the same thing over and over again with not take a break, not getting sick, just accurately over again. People, however, have context, which a machine does not have context. I have many examples in my book when the results are crazy because there's no context. They don't understand the bigger picture. So I think it's going to be a while before people will actually be replaced. A long while. One thing to get people to relax, maybe. 1892 is where Bell Telephone invented the automated exchange. Now, until then, there were women, mostly women, putting in the. By 1950, there were still 350,000. Operators. Only by 1980, 9 decades after the invention, we stopped using human exchange operator. It became all automated. 90 years. It doesn't happen quickly. Why doesn't it happen? Let me just say one more explanation. Why doesn't it happen quickly? There are so many hurdles of the way, even though people say, well, now it's different because AI is software, it can expand quickly and all of this. No, there's always a question of acceptability. I mean, give you an example. Today, whether it be 8350 or 787, a modern jet airplane can go from gate to gate with no pilot. How many of your audience, or you, for that matter, would go on an airplane, would go on a metal tube in the air that has no operator involved? Not many. No, and then again, if you see large driverless trucks running on the road at 100 kilometers an hour. This is disconcerting. And after the first accident, maybe they'll be outlawed. Who knows? And so there's a whole issue of acceptance. There's the issue of labor union who are fighting in order sometimes not to introduce a new technology. Then there's the issue of government regulation. For example, the Chinese government regulates the use of generative AI very severely because they're afraid of how they put it to impact the harmony of the Chinese society and the agreement with the social contract that they have with the Communist Party, whatever. But what they do is they absolutely restrict the training data. So the training data of every one of these is very much restricted. Every one of the Chinese were very restricted. As far as I know, the Italian government totally, doesn't allow ChatGPT. I mean, it's because they don't know what it can create, and it has problems, and so it's not going to happen very fast to begin with. We'll have time to adjust, but adjust we will need. We need to adjust.
So if we maybe look here at the conclusion of our discussion and focus on an area of acceptability, is there an industry at the moment, and you've spoken about how AI or advanced evolving technologies, AI-driven technologies can really help the human. Is there an industry where you see it being an easy sort of target where you would expect immediate acceptability?
There are areas that have to do with, for example, human safety. Mm. They're already acceptable. If you want to clear a minefield, the military is usually now sending robots to do it, and everybody is happy with it. There are no soldiers who say, no, I'll go, because I don't want somebody to replace me. In manufacturing plant, unsafe or dangerous job like welding and paint shops are basically done by robots, and the union is okay with it because it's an issue of safety. So, first of all, area when I see it helping, in the sense that there's a lot less resistance because you do something then. Then there is the area when you don't even know that you are using it. When you are using Google Maps and driving along the road, and it tells you that an hour from now there'll be congestion on the road between A and B, well, it actually does, machine learning. It looks at this day and this day, it's likely that this plant will open and all the workers will go out and you'll have a problem in the congestion. Now Google is putting something else using AI. You'll be able to fly along the route before you go, because they have pictures of everything. So you'll be able to go along the route in virtual reality, basically. So you have a lot of these things that are happening. We talked about some of the... And when you talk to a chatbot, you call a company and they say, just say in words, what do you want? It used to be press A, press 1 if you want, Lauren, press 2 if you want, I don't know, her friend Susan, press 3 if you want. No, it's now just tell me what you want. There's analysis of what you're saying. And here's a clear case. You can say, and it'll get you to the right place, or it gets flustered and gives you to a human operator, which is exactly how these things are going to work. The human operator is going to deal with special cases that are not routine. But I did study this years ago with Dell, the computer company, about the calls to their help center. Mm-hmm. A huge number of the call were just, where's the on-off button? Or did you plug it into electricity? Or, so after a while, this is really can be a lot of we don't need to. Now, if there's some crazy stuff going on, a human goes on the line and try to solve the problem. But this is exactly the type of relationship that I think we're going to have. The machine will solve the simple problem, or they don't have to be simple, but they have to be routine. They happen all the time. So we know the solution are, and humans will get to deal with clients, with suppliers, whatever, in the interesting and new type of problems.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating discovery to see how societies address the developments and also the transitions in the job market and the roles that are created, the enhancement and this acceptability and what's accepted and what's not accepted. But you've certainly given us a lot of food for thought today, the considerations that we can make ourselves. And I'm sure that you've also ensured that there shouldn't be that overblown worry around the eradication of jobs because of emerging technologies.
It's not going to be around. It's think about all the job that you deal with every day and think about how many of them can be automated.
Yep.
It's so hard. So many jobs will not be automated.
Yeah, it's definitely the beauty that the human holds, as we've mentioned, that contextualization that is brought in by the intelligence, the cognitive capabilities. And it's not that there's not the parallel or the development opportunities from a computational perspective, but it's really that special, empathetic, sociological, physiological understanding that's brought in by a human.
Yes, absolutely.
So, The Magic Conveyor Belt. Please tell us about your book, your new book.
The Magic Conveyor Belt. It's a book, The Magic Conveyor Belt. The subtitle is Supply Chain, AI, and the Future of Work. It talks about it expands supply chain because after the pandemic, everybody came to me and went, what is supply chain? We don't have work. Okay, chill. I'll explain what supply chains are. But then I got to the technology involved in supply chain. At the time, as I was writing it, ChatGPT just came out, so I included the generative AI. And the most important thing, you can get it on Amazon or any other online bookstore.
No, it's certainly become a hot topic. I remember as well a lot of narratives that were going around supply chain management post-pandemic and during the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. People discovered it. Discovered the supply chain.
So we can certainly encourage our listeners to access and order the book on Amazon.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much. We wish you all the best.
All right. My pleasure. Very nice talking to you.
So I'd like to thank everyone else for listening today. If you'd like to find out more about AI, NLP or search, then go to the Squirrel Academy on learn.squirrel.com. Thank you.